Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, chapter 4, Vidura approaches Maitreya, text 12. Saisha sadho charamo bhavanam.
Saisha sadho charamo bhavanam.
Asaritaste maranukraho yat.
Asaritaste maranukraho yat.
Yanmam nilokan rautsujantam.
Yanmam nilokan rautsujantam.
Ishtyada drishvam. Vishadhanu vritya.
Vishyada Vishwan Vishadhanu vritya.
Saha.
Saha.
That.
That.
Eshaha.
Eshaha.
Of those.
Of those.
Sadho.
Sadho.
Oh, honest one.
Oh, honest one.
Charamaha.
Charamaha.
The ultimate.
The ultimate.
Bhavanam.
Bhavanam.
Of all your incarnations. As was asaditaha,
asaditaha,
now achieved,
now achieved,
te,
te,
unto you,
unto you,
mat,
mat,
my,
my,
anugraha,
anugraha,
mercy,
mercy,
yet,
yet,
as it is,
as it is,
yet,
yet,
because,
because,
ma,
ma,
me,
me.
Nilokan,
Nilokan,
the planets of the conditioned souls.
Planets of the conditioned souls.
Rahaham,
Rahaham,
in seclusion.
In seclusion.
Utsrijantam,
Utsrijantam,
while quitting.
While quitting.
Dishtya,
Dishtya,
by seeing.
By seeing.
Tadrishvan,
Tadrishvan,
what you have seen.
What you have seen.
Vishada anuvritya,
Vishada anuvritya,
by unflinching devotion.
By unflinching devotion.
Translation. O honest one, your present life is the last and the supermost, because in this term of life you have been awarded my ultimate favor. Now you can go to my transcendental abode Vaikuntha by leaving this universe of conditioned living entities. Your visit to me in this lonely place, because of your pure and unflinching devotional service, is a great boon for you. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. When a person is fully conversant with knowledge of the Lord, as far as can be known by a perfect living entity in the liberated state, he is allowed to enter into the spiritual sky where the Vaikuntha planets exist. The Lord was sitting in a lonely place, just about to disappear from the vision of the inhabitants of this universe, and Uddhava was fortunate to see him even at that time, and thus receive the Lord's permission to enter Vaikuntha. The Lord is everywhere at all times, and his appearance and disappearance are merely the experience of the inhabitants of a particular universe. He is just like the sun. The sun does not appear or disappear in the sky. It is only in the experience of men that in the morning the sun rises and in the evening the sun sets. The Lord is simultaneously both in Vaikuntha and everywhere within and without Vaikuntha. Saisha sadho charamo bhavana asaditaste maranugrahoya yamma Yalokan raha utsrijantam tisjad drishvan vishudan vritya. It is explained in the Shastras that when a living entity becomes pure devotee, that move without any desires for sense gratification on the material platform and without any desires or inclinations for merging into the Brahman or speculating about the Absolute Truth, then he's entitled to leave the material world of conditioned souls, relocate, and he's allowed to enter into the supreme abode. The supreme Dhamma of the Lord. However, before he actually enters the abode of the Lord, he goes for one more birth, or he goes for one more opportunity in the material world, and he is transferred to the planet where the Lord is appearing in the world, and he gets association there with the Lord and the Lord's other associates. And then he becomes completely purified by that association. This is the arrangement. And sounds similar here because Uddhava, being a demigod, one of the Vasus, of course the demigods, they're devotees, but they also have some desires to fulfill in this world. But in order to go back to Vaikuntha, one has to be akama, without any material desires, not even the desire to be a elevated demigod or to be very well situated in the heavenly planets. Another thing here is that this expresses the free will of the devotee or the living entities, because the Lord is congratulating Uddhava for visiting him at this time. In other words, it was a good decision on the part of Uddhava to come there. He didn't have to come. He could have found some of the other things to occupy himself. But because of his strong desire, pure and unflinching devotional service, therefore he had to go. He couldn't remain separated from the Lord. And Krishna is congratulating him. This was a good, very good decision you made to come here. That means free will. If God had ordained for Uddhava to go there, superimposed his ordained, then what would be the use in congratulating him? It would make no sense. Why would the Lord congratulate him if he had no choice in the matter anyway? That's like if I tell my hand or I order my hand to come to this side, then I congratulate the hand. Good job. No, the hand is just the instrument. Has no free will. I would congratulate someone if they came of their own accord. So, this is a philosophical point. The living entities have their own choice. They can surrender to Krishna or not surrender to Krishna. And even within surrendering to Krishna, They also have free will, how to surrender to Krishna and how to serve him. This gives the Lord pleasure. Being God, you could say being God is not easy. Sometimes people say, well, if I were God, I would do things. I wouldn't have arranged it like that. They say that there shouldn't be suffering. Sometimes we hear people say this. There shouldn't be suffering here. People shouldn't have to go through all this miserable material world. And so we ask them, so if you were God, how would you arrange it? And they say, well, if I were God, I would just automatically give I would give all bliss to all the living entities. Okay, and so what would that bliss be? What type of bliss? Would it be in association with yourself? I say, yes. Say, well, okay, what would you do about those who didn't want to associate with you? And of course, then they're stuck. They don't know what to say, because what if someone doesn't want to associate with God? What if he wants to live in the material world? So then, according to that theory, you'd have to overrule them, say, no, sorry, no suffering for you. We're not giving you that choice to be able to live separate from me. So then, that's not a very good situation. Because you may think, you may impose that type of situation upon someone, but he may not want it. Certainly that's the case. Krishna, God, does want the living entities to come back to the spiritual world and to associate with him and to serve him, but he recognizes that they may not wish to do that, and he honors that desire of theirs. That's perfect. The perfect arrangement is he makes it available, and he even tries to encourage them to do so, but it's not forced. Just like a father. Father tries to raise his son to be a good human being, to be a good individual. He gives his love, he gives his association, he maintains, he sends him to teachers, to school, everything. But still, if the child wishes to misuse his independence, then the father just says, what can I do? If the son keeps running away from home, finally the father says, what can I do? I can't force him. He could, if he has enough money, he could hire someone with a gun, you know, and he could hire men to force the son's hands to move in a particular way. He could have him, he could even construct some machine whereby the son was attached, you know, strapped to some machine, but he wouldn't do that. He wouldn't get any pleasure from that. But when people saw his son, they would say, "Oh, what are you doing to your son? We've seen the machine you strapped him to, and he has to walk and he has to sit when the machine sits." I'd say, why are you doing that? This is a cruel thing. They would criticize the father. Isn't it? So, they think it's better, even if the son runs away from the father, at least he's given that right. They think that's better. And that is the way God arranges things. Everyone has free will. To be a good son, and to associate with the Supreme Father, or to be a rebel and to go off on their own into the material world. Another important word here is sadhu. We know that word sadhu. Sadhu means, oh, honest one. Sat is all from the same root. And because a sadhu is one who's very honest, he speaks the truth. He doesn't speak flattering words just to gain some popularity. Just like politicians, they're famous. They'll say anything. Sometimes they do research and they see that a politician will go to one group and he'll say one thing. He'll promise them something. Then he'll go to another group and he'll promise them just the opposite. He'll say the complete opposite thing. Why? Because he's just trying to win votes. He's just trying to get money and to get power and popularity. It doesn't make any difference to him about the truth or the integrity. He has no... There's no integrity. There's no truth. Just say whatever you have to say to win the election. This is what the situation has come to now. And that's why generally devotees are not interested in voting. I was recently asked this question when I was visiting Los Angeles. They said, "So do you vote? Who do you vote for?" I said, "I don't vote. There's no one qualified to vote for." And they were alarmed. "Oh, you're not taking responsibility. You don't care about the country." I said, "I care. I care, and I'm doing my work to try to make people qualified so that then there can be someone to vote for. That's why we're establishing our centers. That's why we're preaching. That's why we're giving education. So that people will become qualified. Otherwise, why should you vote for someone who's untruthful, who has no knowledge, whose qualities are full of ignorance and passion? Why should you vote?" But the devotees do care about the world. They're not just callous and uninterested, indifferent. No, they care. And they're working very hard to try to train up first-class persons. I was listening to a lecture, Srila Prabhupada recently, he was saying, this movement is for training up some brahmanas to give direction to society, because there's no brahmanas. There's no persons who have any knowledge. Brahmana means the head of society. This is a headless society. Just like if you have a headless body. Is anyone interested in having a headless body? If someone offers you, "We have this body, it doesn't have a head though, but would you be interested?" Well, what can you do with it? If it has a head, it can do some service. Right? You hire people. In the newspaper they have ads. They say, you know, "This job, this position is available," but they're all for people with heads. Are any of those positions for those without heads? No. They have to be head. A headless body is worthless. It's worse than worthless. Because what are you going to do with it? You have to spend a lot of money to discard it. "Well, now we've got this headless body here. What to do with it? You have to take it, burn it, dispose of it." So, society without brahmanas is a headless society. It's dead. But that's what we have now. Do you see the situation? Where are the Brahmanas? Tell me who the Brahmanas are. Someone can indicate. Go ahead. Who are the Brahmanas?
Gunas Brahman. Gunas Brahman.
Yes, but I'm saying in your society, your modern society, where are the Brahmanas?
Scientists?
Oh. And so they're all atheists, practically. Practically, that it's almost a qualification, a prerequisite, that God is not proven. Because by their scientific method, God has to be, we have to physically see God with our eyes, and we have to be able to mix in the laboratory and produce God, otherwise we can't believe He exists. It's practically a prerequisite for living in the modern scientific world, especially if you're going to be a scientist, that you have to say that I cannot believe in something that is beyond my experimental knowledge. It's not scientific. According to their definition, it would be heretical. It would be heretical. You know what that means? Heretic. One who he completely goes against the religion. So it would be heretical to go against, to believe in something that is beyond my experimental. If I can't experiment with it, if I can't show it in the laboratory. But to believe in something like that, immediately all your colleagues would say, oh, doctor, such and such. How is it that you're believing in something that has no evidence, no proof? And then you'd have to say, well, I have faith. So they can't accept that. That's not within the scientific allowing. Right? It's not allowed, practically speaking. At least in the modern. Now, if you go back some years, there were some scientists, some great scientists, who had some belief in God. Generally, the scientists are in the category of the atom, those who believe in the atomic theory. Everything is simply broken down to some small atoms. Ultimately, there's no form, there's no personality. This is all illusion. Sometimes the scientists say that the creation or that the universe is eternal. That's another theory, that it's always existing, generally in different forms. But to accept a personal God is very difficult. Or they fall in the category of the Samkhya philosophers, 24 elements, or 23 elements, without any soul. Because, again, it's like I was speaking with a scientist when I was flying here. He was a neurobiologist. So I said, what about consciousness? Can you explain consciousness through science? He said, that's very difficult for us. Yes. It's very difficult to explain consciousness, the soul, God, anything personal, because your scientific theory is very mechanistic. He admitted that. So you can't actually explain you can't even explain yourself, because your person And he said, well, according to science, we would say that the elements are simply, they appear to be personal. That's an impression that we get based on the characteristics, but actually it's not personal. There's no such thing as consciousness. That's what he said. So basically, back to the idea, there's no soul, there's no persons, and there's certainly no God, because everything is simply randomly going on. So, if you say the scientists are the Brahmanas, well, again, you have no head, because they say there's no God. They don't understand even themselves. They cannot even explain who they are. Politicians are the Brahmins? Well, generally politicians are the arms. The Kshatriyas are the arms, the administrative head. They force, they execute. Yes, the ministers, they're generally Brahmas, just like Chanakya Pandit. Chanakya Pandit was the prime minister for Chandragupta. And he didn't hold any office, but he just came each day. He lived outside the palace. He wouldn't take a place in the palace or within the close proximity of the king. Why? Because he wanted to remain aloof. He didn't want to be purchased. And he wouldn't take any salary either. Just see, the Brahmanas are so, they're so attached to truth that they will not even take a salary because they know the salary will compromise the truth. If I'm purchased, if I'm paid, then I can't speak the truth. So Chanakya Pandit, every day he would come in to give advice to the king. One day he gave some advice and the king said, this I cannot accept. And Chanakya Pandit said, okay, I'm leaving. And he just left. Because he was not going to compromise the truth. He knew what the truth was. He was a Brahmin. So he wasn't going to compromise just to keep his job. Because a Brahmana is not employed by anyone. He's independent. He gives advice to the Kshatriyas and to the other members of society. That's his voluntary service. This is what he does. And if he gets some alms, whatever he gets that is contributed, he accepts. The Brahmana has six occupations. Patana patana yajana yajana dana patigra. Patana means studying. He's a scholar. Studies scriptures. Patana patana, and he teaches others. Patana patana yajana, he performs sacrifices for himself, and yajana, he performs on behalf of others and he teaches others. Yajana, yajana. Dana means he gives in charity, and pratigraha, he accepts charity. So when he gets more than he requires, he distributes it. Just like we see the Krishna consciousness movement hold big festivals. Well, that's distributing money, isn't it? That's distributing because it costs a lot of money to put on a festival. All the arrangements, if you put on a Rath Yatra festival, costs quite a bit of money. Or to distribute prasadam, free prasadam to thousands of people. This movement every day is distributing prasadam to millions of people. Isn't it? If you consider all the centers in ISKCON and all the affiliated locations where grihasthas live or where there's little namhata arrangements that are affiliated with ISKCON, in a day that they must distribute, you know, umpteen millions of plates of prasadam. So this distribution, this is dana, and distributing prasadam. But they also receive alms. Money comes in. People donate to the sadhus, to the brahmins. And they should, to the brahmins and vaishnavas. This is the proper use. So my point is that the politicians are not supposed to be brahmanas, but the ministers are. But unfortunately, the ministers are not qualified. They don't know. They're all eating meat. They're all taking intoxication. They're all gambling. They're all taking illicit sex. How can they be brahmanas? Even the high court judges, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, Bhaktisiddhanta? Yeah. Bhaktisiddhanta would say this because his father was a high court judge. But anyway, he said, when the high court judges are wearing beautiful tilak, then we're having some influence in society. His father was a high court judge. But right now, the high court judges, they don't wear tilak. So the point is that it's a brainless or a headless society. You may say, well, brainless, well, that's, those are strong words. But what about headless? Is that a strong word? Headless means also brainless. Even more, not only no brain, no eyes, no ears, no nose, brainless. So this is, have you ever seen a chicken with its head cut off? Have you seen that? Never seen a chicken with the head cut off? They run around and they bump into everything. Because you know why? They move headed. But they still have some, they're still, it's just the nature of a chicken. It still has some energy. It's still got some enthusiasm, there's some energy still. So the body is still running around, but there's no head, so there's no reasoning to where it runs. It bumps into everything, creates a bloody mess. So our society is like that. It's like a chicken with its head cut off. Just making bloody mess, so many abortions, so many slaughterhouses. Prabhupada said the first thing a Krishna conscious leader would do is stop the slaughterhouses, the very first thing. But look how many bloody, how they're killing so many animals. Why? Is it necessary? Do you have to eat all those animals to live? Can you not live without it? We're showing that you can live without eating meat. In fact, it's even proven now, the medical associations agree that it's healthier to live vegetarian. And still they go on with their slaughterhouses. Does this make any sense? It's healthier, it's more economical, it's against all the scriptures. It's ghastly. There's so many. Now you have the different diseases, mad cow disease and mad man diseases. Still they go on. They won't give it up because they have no brain. They're chickens with their head cut off. They're doing crazy things. Makes no sense. Costs more money. Not good health. So much effort has to go into refrigeration. The health department, the main concern with health departments is flesh. What to do with flesh, because it's so dangerous. I remember because I was in Amsterdam sometime, we were thinking of setting up a restaurant. So we called the health department to come out, and they came out and they said, okay, so where will you be keeping the meat? We said, we're vegetarians. They said, well, what'd you call us for? It's not necessary. Because the main concern was meat. Because meat, you have to keep it either very cold or very hot, but you can't keep it in between because then it gets diseases. So they were mainly concerned with how will you keep it cold or how will you keep it hot? Well, we don't have any meat. No, and where's your alcohol? No alcohol? No meat, no alcohol? It's no risk. Vegetarian lifestyle is practically risk-free. So, anyway, even when they understand these things, they go on. This is brainless. This means no brain. Headless. There's no Brahmins. No one's giving them direction. There's no brain to send out the signals to the body, to the rest of the body, what to do. There's no Brahmins. The scientists are dead, and the religious leaders, they're all eating meat. Even the Buddhists, even the leading Buddhist in the world eats meat. Even though Buddha came, Ahimsa Paramo Dharma, he came to stop the animal slaughter. Sadaya Haridaya Darshito Pashukhatha, to show compassion to the animals, and the leading Buddhist, he's also eating meat. And all the religious leaders eat meat. So they're not Brahmins. They don't know they have no brain. They're brainless. So it's a very dangerous situation. And this movement is the only hope to create some intelligent persons to give direction to society. So that's our job, is to become Brahmanas and then to make others Brahmanas also. Tadiksha vidanena dvijatvam jayate nam. Yata kanchanatam yati kangsam rasa vidanata. Just as bell metal, when mixed with mercury in alchemical process, can be made into gold, similarly, by the process of diksha or initiation, one can be made a Brahman, even if he was not born into a Brahman family. Kalos Shudra Samrava, everyone's born Shudra in this age. No one's born Brahman. Any questions?
Gurmanat, is there any special effort we could do in order to influence the heads of society?
There's no head.
Yeah.
The trunkless, the trunks running around bashing into everything. It's difficult to preach to them, isn't it? While they're running around, smashing into everything, making everything bloody. That's why we generally preach to the youth. That's why we aim for the young people, because there's some hope there. At least they can listen. The younger, the better. Komara achare pragyo dharmam bhagavatanya. Of course, we may also try. Our main emphasis, you could say, is for young people, but we should also try to preach to the politicians. Although, Prabhupada did it. He would do it. Whenever there was an opportunity to preach to a politician, he would do it. But then afterwards he would usually say, they're useless. But like when Indira Gandhi, when word came to Prabhupada, I think he was in America if I'm not mistaken, word came to him that Indira Gandhi agreed to meet him. He dropped everything, stopped his tour, and went back to India to meet with her. What then happens? That's what you used to know. Because they're too wrapped up to hear properly. But still we do it. Because we know that if a politician or a leader does take it up seriously, then it can have a big impact. Yad yad acharati shrestas tattare vetaro janaha. Even if they change their own lifestyle, it will have a big impact. If the leader becomes a devotee of the Lord, a devotee of Krishna, people will be influenced. Any other questions? Yeah.
When I was talking to one person regarding stopping eating meat, he was telling that if I don't eat meat, the world will be overburdened with anyone.
Pardon me?
The world will be overburdened with animals. Like there will be so many.
Overrun.
For example, he was telling that if they don't eat fish for some time, then the whole sea will become full of fish or something like that.
No. The whales will be allowed to live again. Whales eat huge amounts of fish at one gulp. They gulp up thousands of fish. They take a big breath, they go down for several hours with one breath, and they go underneath. They're mammals, they're not actually fish, so to speak, technically. But they go under with this for 6 hours, and they take a big swallow, and they eat all these fish. So you don't have to do the work of the whales. Let the whales do that work, eating the fish. Fish eating is not for humans. And as far as for eating the animals, that's the work of the tigers, you know. The tigers, we were reading about Prashodra. He was guarding the cow shed at night, but a tiger came and killed one cow. So that may happen. A tiger may come and kill one cow or something like that. That's his business. He's a tiger. But when you humans become like tigers, that's not very good. You're doing the work of the tigers.
He was saying that God has provided everything.
But it's not true. We also read in history, formerly they didn't have slaughterhouses. We don't read that the whole world was overwhelmed with, there was no room to walk for the humans because they were being trampled by all the cows. We don't read that in our history books. Even 5,000 years ago, there were no slaughterhouses. But we don't read that in the Bhagavatam or the Mahabharata that the people couldn't walk, they got squished by all the cows. No, we don't read that. So that's incorrect theory, but based on history. In the time of Ramayana, that was millions of years ago, that wasn't the case. And even 5,000 years ago, it wasn't the case. And slaughterhouses are a new thing anyway. Abattoir. This is a new thing. This is not... formerly, they didn't have slaughterhouses. Not like they do today. So that's also not correct. Such theory. Was that a scientist who said that?
No, actually he was telling that God has provided everything, so that's why...
No, after saying this incorrect statement, then he said more incorrect statements too. That statement is completely incorrect. It's not... there's no evidence for that from history.
Yeah, actually I told the same thing. For living animals, there are animals. There are other higher animals.
Okay, so then after he made that incorrect statement, then he made another incorrect statement?
Later he said, he was saying that God has provided everything and it is whatever I like, I will eat. That's what
I said. God has provided everything, but God doesn't provide everything for you to eat. Why don't you eat stool? There's plenty of stool around. It would be a great service, actually, if you would eat stool. We could save so much money we have to spend for disposal arrangements, for making things sanitation. It would be good if you ate. We could arrange So what about that? Why don't you eat that? You say it doesn't taste good? Anyway, these people, they don't think. They have no brain. This is the problem with modern society, drinking and all these activities. They make one brainless. Brain doesn't function properly. Illicit sex, intoxication. It's actually proven that alcohol, it dissolves the lipids in the brain. That's why one goes insane. When he drinks, then each time he goes a little insane. Right? You see what happens when someone drinks. We saw it, was it yesterday on Hurry Up? The man was drinking, he was insane. He was, you know, making no sense at all, attacking. So, now, so each time he drinks, the alcohol dissolves the brain parts a little bit. And if he keeps drinking more and more, you see what happens? They become completely insane. Like the other one who was with us. Somehow or other, he was insane, but still, by Krishna's mercy, had the good fortune to like the chanting and the devotees. This is the devotee's mercy. Shrimad Bhagavatam ki jai.